A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rehm, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on May 11, 1997, entitled, What Defines a Family? The texts for the sermon are Acts 1, verses 6 through 14, and Mark 3, verse 35. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Well, it's Mother's Day. That high holy day on the liturgical calendar. Who could miss it? Seems like we've been bombarded for some time now, holding out all kinds of wonderful things that we can do for our mothers. A couple weeks ago, Nancy and I were in that cavernous paradise of consumer lust, Marshall Fields down in the Loop. And usually, in order that she may pursue her buying and enjoying without harassment, she says, could you meet me in about an hour? And we identify some spot, of course, and I always fail to remember whether we came in on Randolph or State or Wabash or where. So I was looking a bit dismayed. I guess you couldn't go up any aisle without being accosted by some lady with some wonderful merchandise to offer. And I tried to avoid contact as much as I could, but one caught me square, and she said, how do you do, sir? She said, are you looking for a wonderful gift for a woman? I said, no. I said, really, I am looking for a wonderful woman. And she said, oh, someone like you shouldn't have any problem. And I said, so they say. Well, we did find each other, and I managed to get out of there without buying too many fragrances that day. But like I said, it's Mother's Day is a day that has conquered America. No, Mother's Day hasn't conquered America. Hallmark has conquered America through the brilliant strategy of Madison Avenue. And so here we are in divine worship. There are some purists who would not deviate from the liturgical calendar no matter what's coming down. And therefore, on a day like this, there would be no mention of mothers because this is the last Sunday of Eastertide and it's Ascension Sunday, since we don't celebrate Ascension Day on Ascension Day, which is 40 days after Easter, which was Thursday. And those purists wouldn't deviate from that liturgical calendar and would probably bore you to tears today with stories about the Ascension. And I'm not a purist, obviously. I deviate whenever necessary. But it's nice when you've been around so long, you can find those little passages of Scripture that manage to have both Ascension and a mother in one paragraph. And that's what we have this morning. It is Ascension Day, and Luke, particularly Luke, wants to make sure that there is a hiatus between the historical ministry of Jesus in the days of his flesh and the ministry of the church in the power of the Spirit. And so Luke has that sense of the historical unfolding, the stages of redemption, and we have crucifixion and resurrection. And then Luke is the one who tells us that there was a period of 40 days in which Jesus manifested himself, so to speak, to say, I'm really alive, it is really I. And then that period of various and sundry appearances seemed to come to an end by and large. And Luke even makes the Ascension an event witnessed by the disciples. And it is an important movement into the next stage, which we will celebrate next week, and the day of Pentecost, and the baptism of the Spirit of God. But Luke does something interesting that's not altogether unimportant for Mother's Day. And that is that he gets Mary, the mother of Jesus, and his brothers back into the family with Jesus. You know, Jesus and his mother had their tensions and their struggle. In fact, in Lent, this past Lent, just a few weeks ago, I used that Mark passage. That passage that says that when Jesus inaugurated his ministry and was besieged by the crowds in that time of his popularity, that there were those who saw him as a threat, and they said, he's gone off the deep end. He's crazy. And he got into a confrontation with his critics and denied that what he was doing under demonic influence. Rather, he was doing it under the Spirit of God. There was a sharp confrontation, but anyway, the word was out. He's gone off the deep end. And Mary and his brothers, Mark tells us, came to where he was teaching in order to bring him home, because he was an embarrassment to them, and I'm sure they were concerned about him. We can understand that. Haven't the newspapers and the media been full of accounts of families who have agonized over sons and daughters that committed the mass suicide, taking their clue from Hebeweth, that the celestial sign of Hale-Bopp said, it's time to depart. And so we've heard a lot of stories of alienation and estrangement, of sons and daughters that hadn't been in touch for years, or perhaps some touch, and yet the colliding and collision of ideology and of faith commitments and so forth. During the season of Lent, I preached on that text under the theme, Love Hurts. Love does hurt. And Mary and her other sons went to bring Jesus home because they were concerned about him. Because we do live under the pressure of community opinion. And there is a kind of conventional wisdom out there, and there is a sort of expected behavior. And when that's moved away from, we get very uneasy. And Jesus said in response to their request, they couldn't get close to him, there were so many people, handed them a note, your mother and your brothers are here. My mother and my brothers. Who are my mother and my brothers? The ones who do the will of God. Those are my mother and my brothers and my sisters. And I don't think that Jesus was saying those that belong to my denomination. I don't think this was a narrowly religious kind of thing. I think Jesus was saying sometimes there is a vision of life, an understanding of its meaning and of its purpose. Sometimes there is that ultimate concern that moves one from the depths. And when that isn't shared, then it's difficult to bridge that fellowship. There is estrangement and there is alienation. And Jesus was saying, there is a natural given family, but he said there is a deeper family, a community of ultimate concern and vision and commitment that transcends those natural ties of the family circle. That was a hard word for Mary. I linked it with the word from the cross in John's Gospel, where there's a hint that maybe that estrangement and alienation had been healed, because he says, woman, behold your son. Son, behold your mother. I must have made that point rather strongly on that Lenten service, because when I got home for dinner, Nancy said, "I don't like Jesus." Now that really made me break out into a sweat. But of course, why couldn't he have just said mother at the cross? It's not comfortable, is it? There's something we would desire more from this mother-son relationship. But in the passage in Acts, we get something more. Because there, not without reason, not just as an aside, but I think intentionally, very purposely, Luke says, following the ascension, following the instruction of Jesus to go to the city and to wait for the baptism of the Spirit, to be empowered to carry out that mission of the gospel, the disciples gathered in the upper room and they were praying, and there were with them the women that were a part of that intimate circle, and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and his brothers. I think Luke was saying that given family had eventuated or had emerged into that deeper dimension of human community, of shared value and vision, of shared ultimate concern. It's the last notice we have of Mary, the mother of Jesus. But his brother James became the leader of the Jerusalem church. His brother James was the ongoing observant Jew who followed Jesus as Messiah. His brother. That's not easy to do. But he became the leader of the Jerusalem community, and the Jerusalem community was that conservative Jesus community that was in tension with Paul, who was the apostle called to the Gentile world. Interesting to speculate on whether Jesus' own brother James got it right, or whether Paul saw through even more profoundly than James the difference between that Jerusalem, Jesus, Jewish community and that developing Gentile mission. But it is good to know that Mary and the brothers of Jesus were able to move beyond the givenness of family in which there was so much tension and estrangement to that commonality of vision and value, so that they could be a part of that new family that Jesus formed, a family bound together more profoundly than any given natural ties can do. So what is a family? Well, a family is obviously, to begin with, that given circle of parents and children, where children are cared for and where they are nurtured and where they are formed. And there's a great deal of discussion about the family in our society today, and there can be no argument about the fact that that basic social unit has come upon difficult days. The family, ideally, it's a place for care, for nurture, for provision, for the formation into a humane existence. And it can take different shapes and forms, but that function needs to be fulfilled, or a society will be in trouble. as we well know. And I want to take a moment this morning to congratulate you on your families. These children that jammed this chancel this morning are beautiful, aren't they? Shining faces, ribbons in their hair, bouncing and bowing and singing their hearts out. They are beautiful. You've done good. Your children are marvelous. And we are committed to their nurture with you, committed to the support of the family. And I don't know of a place where it's happening any better. From the worship center kids right on up through, where they are being grounded in the biblical story and being invited to sing and to dance, bringing it to expression. Where they are invited to wonder and to stand in awe, to raise any question, and to pursue any angle or experiment. Your children are wonderful, and here they are being given a marvelous support in their growing faith formation. Last Monday night at the elders' meeting with the confirmands who will be received here next Sunday, those young people are outstanding. They're bright. They are free. They are open. They raise questions. They feel at home here. And to hear their word was wonderful. Congratulations on the job you've done in your homes, and the shaping and the forming of your young people. And once in a while, there's one or two that are brave enough even to engage me in a one-to-one, maybe in an interview or whatever, not intimidated by this old man. Just come right on in, and we sit across the table from one another, and I am always so impressed with your sons and daughters. They are the best and the brightest. And when you see them all scrubbed up and clean and serious, my goodness, they are impressive. I like them one at a time. You know, you get two or three or four together with a baseball cap on backwards with the sweatshirt that defies the possibility that there could be a body inside, with the sleeves that hang down to the kneecaps, dressed in jeans where the crotch runs down to the kneecaps as well, and the legs mop up the landscape as they move. Now, they scare me, you know, they scare me, but they're wonderful. And so I want to say this morning, you're doing a wonderful job with your children. And when we hear all the horror stories about the youth, I have to say, I don't see it. I don't see it here. That given family is absolutely critical for the formation of children and young people that will go out and launch themselves. And that's the second thing I would say about a family. It is of limited function, not absolute. The family is to form and shape and prepare and support and launch. And that's the tricky part. That's where the tension came in between Jesus and his mother. And it's so understandable, because we do love them. We do care about them. We hurt for all the potential pitfalls that are lying out there for their destruction. And yet, what defines a family? Not only that love that cares and gets them going, but the trust to let them fly? The letting go, the taking off of the controls. Oh, good Lord, it's scary, but necessary. Jesus could not go home with Mary. In the Gnostic Gospels, the Gospel of Thomas, a group of manuscripts that was discovered in 1945 in Egypt, made accessible to us by the likes of an Elaine Pagels that Nancy and I hope to meet tomorrow evening at dinner. The Gospel of Thomas, she lifts up one of her favorite passages. The Gospel of Thomas, the scholars feel, is as early, maybe even earlier than Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. It is a Gnostic gospel. It's that alternative interpretation and understanding of Jesus. It's one of those interpretations and understandings that fell on the cutting room floor. But like Elaine Pagels says, you know, the winners write the histories, huh? Well, anyway, here's the Gospel of Thomas, a statement from Jesus that says, if you bring forth what is within you, it will save you. But if you do not bring forth what is within you will destroy you. That could be a sermon too, couldn't it? If there is something in you that is intrinsically you, that unless it comes to expression, you will die, your soul will wither, then you see what does not come forth will destroy you. Jesus said, if you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you are being true to yourself, to thy own self be true, and allow that which is deepest in you, that passion, that vision, let it come forth. And Mary, mother, father, let it come forth. Risky, risky, life is risky. The family plays an absolutely critical role, but it has a limited function. There is a time for our sons and daughters to fly, and to trust them and to love them, no matter whether the flight plan pleases us or not. And what makes a family? Well, there's always that possibility of the tension dissolving and the alienation being bridged, and community established at a deeper level than ever. That's why I like the picture of Mary and Jesus' brothers praying in the upper room. Once again, not in a narrowly religious sense, but in a sense that they saw in Jesus that ultimate concern which they finally could come as well to embrace and to become a part of that new age, that new family, that new world. So, what defines a family? Good, solid foundations given lovingly to nurture and form, to be sure. And a certain limited function, allowing the freedom to move out. But then always the openness to one another, to listen, to change, to forgive, to heal, and to move to an even deeper human community, which is more than simply the given. They say that blood is thicker than water, that old saying, and certainly it's borne out again and again. But there is something thicker than blood. It is that shared community, that common human community that binds us soul to soul and spirit to spirit into a family beyond anything that the given family can provide. This is family. This is a good place.